You're listening to the Accenture Insurance Influencers Podcast.
You know, I think there needs to be this culture of upheaval if you want to have change. At the same time, change is really, really difficult, and it's especially difficult for large organizations with legacy technology and legacy infrastructure and legacy thinking.
Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Yigrani Yu, and today I'm speaking with Ruth Fox-Blader. She's a managing director at Anthemis on the investment team. Thanks for making the time to speak with me today, Ruth.
It's my pleasure.
Tell me a bit about your role at Anthemis and what you're focusing on there.
Anthemis is the world's leading fintech investor committed to cultivating change in financial services. So we have made more than 90 investments in fintech, and we have more than 190 million capital deployed across a really broad range of fintech and insurtech propositions for the past 10 years. I lead an investment vehicle at Anthemis, which is focused specifically on insurtech, but I look broadly at propositions across fintech and insurtech.
Fascinating. And I'm looking forward at getting into more of what you're looking for and your work at Anthemis. I wanted to start with a little bit about you, because you have an unexpected background, I think, at least from my perspective, for someone who's in insurtech and VC. Briefly, the Cliff Notes version, you studied literature and criminology. You've worked for the PR firm Reuter Finn, and then you were at PepsiCo as well before you joined Allianz Ventures and then Anthemis. So I'm wondering how all those pieces fit together to inform your role as a VC today.
Yeah, I think the one thing that's true about VC is that it's eminently learnable. And I stand by that not only because it serves me well, but also because I've seen people come to VC, particularly in my generation, always from somewhere else. I feel really lucky to have had a pretty diverse background. I really do love literature. Criminology is really cool. It's sort of the intersection of sociology and psychology and law, and all of those things are really essential to my day job, frankly, thinking about demographic trends, thinking about contracts and legal documents, and thinking about people. I grew up in tech, so my role at Reuter Finn was really building the digital agency within this quite established communications firm, private communications firm, and was there at the inception of that project, where I worked for a number of years, both in New York and then in Europe. And then from there, I guess at the time, I was really focused on what was in the early 2000s emerging technology, getting people their first websites and intranets up and running, exploring social media and its impact on consumption and communications. And as I continued to really be interested in what was on the cutting edge, it became clear that the startup ecosystem was really where those cutting edge things were happening. So what we now consider very much legacy tech was emerging tech when I started. At PepsiCo, I ran a project called PepsiCo 10, where we were really bringing startups into contact with the PepsiCo brands. And I really realized that that was very much the space that I wanted to stay in. And I was always really interested in financial services. And I think that this is where my background is, like many people at Anthemis. We really see financial services as the kind of nervous system of the world. And it underpins all of our interactions and our economy and in many ways our society. So when I had the opportunity to go to Allianz, essentially to do what I had been doing at PepsiCo, really bring a large organization into contact with startups, I jumped at the opportunity.
So I want to pick up on something that you just mentioned, which is that at the time, this new or emerging technology of the internet and social media, which of course today is almost not even technology at all, they're just part of the fabric of our society. So at the time when you were working on these strategies, did you see where it was going, or what questions did you ask in order to kind of navigate that world?
I mean, I worked with a really cool, interesting, curious team. And I think we were really asking the questions and seeing in real time the digital revolution changing the way that people think and live and consume. So we were conscious that things were changing, and we could see kind of analogs between or analogies between the digital world and the analog world. And we were definitely trying to push the envelope. I think I continue to watch change and to try to anticipate change in the same way. And sometimes you're right and sometimes you're not right. But it is very exciting to feel really to live through what we're living through and to feel like you have the opportunity to participate in change, you know, on behalf of organizations and also individually.
So it sounds to me like the way that you have incorporated this digital technology was through a new division, perhaps, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, but you were brought into a fairly traditional organization and tasked with bringing in the digital strategy. Can you talk a little bit about the integration and the culture that needed to be navigated there in order for you to be effective and to really do what you needed to do in that organization?
Yeah, I think when you work on the agency side, you work on behalf of clients with their teams and you really commiserate with the teams that you work with. And I would say that I've always worked either on or with innovation teams in one way or another. And I think the real challenge there is the challenge of you know, the body sort of killing the foreign entity that enters it. You're trying to vaccinate the organization without getting killed. You know, those types of teams are sometimes wrong, first of all. And so it's really easy to sort of say, oh, well, don't listen to them. The last thing they said was really stupid. But I think, you know, I think there needs to be this culture of upheaval if you want to have change. At the same time, change is really, really difficult. And it's especially difficult for large organizations with legacy technology and legacy infrastructure and legacy thinking. So I think I've always been at the vanguard of that kind of conflict. And I think it takes a special kind of personality to be comfortable with it, not only comfortable with conflict, but also comfortable swimming against the current. So I'm pretty sensitive to that, you know, both the founders that I meet who were involved with large organizations previously and just couldn't take it anymore, or, you know, young founders who never worked in that context and can't figure out why they can't sell to large organizations. I think that these are problems which are pretty constant and I've sort of encountered consistently throughout my career.
Do you feel like there are keys to managing that conflict in a constructive way?
Sure. I mean, I guess there are always keys to managing conflict in a constructive way. I think one of the things which I would stress with the companies that I work with is, you know, making sure that the people that they're dealing with have the power to actually effectuate change or execute on the bigger vision of the projects that they're working on. So often we see innovation teams relegated to sort of playgrounds or, you know, non-decision-making roles. And that can be a real waste of time for small companies that frankly don't know better than to, you know, pour a lot of energy and resources into those relationships. But I think, you know, there are a number of success factors and they're largely interpersonal and they're largely about perseverance and sort of, you know, being respectful and having a good sense of humor. But I don't think that there's a silver bullet. And I think it's one of the reasons that we see change and particularly in the insurance industry coming so slowly, because I think that the forces against change are quite large.
Right. I want to circle back and close up the conversation with your diverse background. And it seems to me like you've made a number of fairly smart and strategic career pivots several times. I'm wondering if you have any personal success factors that you attribute that record to.
It's a good question. I guess I'm really curious and I always let my curiosity lead me. And I've never said, well, I probably can't do that. I think if I've wanted to do something, I've believed that I'm really, really hardworking and can probably accomplish it. My dad told me one time, if you're not learning something in your job, then you should quit. And I think that that's something that really, I think it was just really great advice. It's something that I've, you know, repeated a number of times to friends who have been asking themselves if they should leave their current place of work or, you know, people that I encounter in the community. And I think it's something that I've always really held dear to me is that just be continuously learning. And once you stop learning, then it's time to move on.
Good words to live by. We'll switch tacks a little bit, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about Anthemis and your work there. I noticed that Anthemis describes itself as reinventing financial services for the digital world. I'm curious if you can break that down for me. You've mentioned the financial services as nervous system. I'm curious how the digital world specifically plugs into that.
Yeah, so I think that the way we see things at Anthemis is that we really are living through a technology revolution. And what happens in technology revolutions is that everything changes. And so there's a lot of, as I said before, legacy systems, legacy thinking, legacy capital, which prevent change in the first instance. But the efficiency and potential inclusivity of technology forces change. And so we look to be at the vanguard of those changes. Our CIO, Sean Park, always says, you know, we're skating to where the puck will be. The way we do that is by investing. We really look to invest in diversity, and it's been very much at the core of the Anthemis ethos from the very beginning, looking for diverse founders who have something new to say. We are looking to cultivate better, smarter VC practices, which will impact financial services practices. We hope to unearth the next generation of financial services innovators. And yeah, I think that we have sort of a thematic focus on a couple of key growth areas. We think about finance as being intrinsically embedded in the way people live and do business. And we see technology as a key to allowing finance to be more deeply embedded and more naturally embedded. So we have a big focus around there, around that type of thing. Essentially, we are looking for what's really different and what's really going to shape the future. And it's a very refreshing place to work. It's the best place I've ever worked. And we continuously have debates about, you know, the different permutations of what the future could look like, because it's not written yet, and are seeking to find elements of that future and invest in them.
In a digital world, then, if we're looking at FS teams and or FS companies and a future that we don't know what it looks like, what does Anthemis think needs to be in the anatomy of a next generation financial services company?
So I guess technologically, all of the efficiencies that, you know, we're able to build out of digital tools, fundamentally from a diversity and inclusion perspective, teams that are really bringing new ideas, different ways of thinking, sort of cognitive diversity, as well as you know, more obvious kinds of diversity to the party, really, you know, a high level of efficiency and sort of new ways of thinking about unit economics, whether it's more innovative access to capital or more innovative ways of trading or funding new ideas, looking at the way that data impacts decision making, and that can be all kinds of data. It could be, you know, everything from sort of sensor data to more traditional financial services data. We have a pretty broad thesis also around changes to infrastructure. Those things might not be things that we invest in from some of the funds that we're running now, but we think that the world is really going to look a lot different very soon.
When we hear about VC startups and funding, we often hear about the success stories. So the IPOs, the funding, people who raise a ton of money. We don't always hear about the things that don't work. And I'm wondering if you can comment on why some companies do so well and others don't.
Sure. I'm happy to talk about success factors, and I have been involved with I've been involved with companies that have done really, really well, and I've been involved with companies that have been really challenged. I think that there are on the sort of challenged side, there have been a number of companies in the InsurTech ecosystem which have wound up recently, and we've sort of seen that happen in the public space. So, you know, maybe we'll talk with the challenges first. I think that particularly in financial services, there are a couple of things you need to get right. Obviously, one is regulatory and compliance stuff. You know, it's a highly regulated industry. It's very different from building other kinds of consumer tech, and so that's something that, you know, falling afoul of the regulator, probably not a good thing to do. The other thing that I think is really tricky in financial services is the unit economics. So the kind of considerations around cost of capital, considerations around how large the market needs to be and how much money it's going to cost to capture that market, and, you know, the threats from incumbent players really come from their staying power in terms of the capital reserves that they have to hand. So it's difficult to be scrappy and bootstrap when you need hundreds of millions of dollars to get to scale. And I often see founders underestimating the impact that just unit economics will have. And it's easy to overestimate how much market share you can capture, or you know, what customer acquisition costs, or underestimate customer acquisition costs. But those things, even if there's a really interesting proposition, it takes a long time for the fire to catch, and companies need to be properly funded if they're going to make it that long time. By contrast, I think the really big successful companies, both that I've been involved with and that I admire, do a bunch of things right. I think they create a proposition that people, or if it's B2B, enterprises really need and really want to buy. And that those propositions are just really well built and well made and easy to use and demonstrably superior to what exists. I think that they're usually quite good at selling those things. And I think that they have figured out the capital side, meaning that they've been able, normally in VC, meaning that they've been able to attract capital to the companies, which will allow them to sustain a period of loss-leading growth.
I'm expecting a lot of those successful companies will be at InsurTech Connect in a few weeks. You've been a panelist there before, and you're on the docket again this year. Can you give us any teasers for what you might be talking about?
I cannot yet, but it'll be this and more. I'm very excited about InsurTech Connect. It's really amazing event. There are, you know, it's bigger and bigger every single year. And if you're there and you're open, you can meet, you know, all kinds of people. Typically, I will look to be, I hope, you know, in the midst of my portfolio. We have 10 companies in the portfolio, the vehicle that I run. And growing. So that's always really exciting. And, you know, I kind of like to just talk about these issues with whomever's interested in them.
And do you feel like the event has changed? I mean, obviously the size has changed, but fundamentally, do you feel like how has the evolution of InsurTech Connect been as someone who's attended and been part of that conversation?
Yeah, it has changed. I think as InsurTech has become more institutionalized, it's just become bigger. And I think, of course, for like the old people from the streets like me, you're always hearkening back to a day when it's more intimate. But I think it's really a rare opportunity to be around so many people who are interested in the same stuff. I think it will change again, because I think that the organizers are really talented at, you know, creating consistency with past events, but also making each year feel new. So I will definitely be there, and my team will be there too.
Fantastic. That was the first part of my conversation with Ruth Fox Blader, a managing director on the investment team at Anthemis. Ruth, thanks so much for speaking with me.
Thank you so much.
We'll circle back to my interview with Ruth Fox Blader in a few weeks. Join me in 2 weeks as I pick up my conversation with Caribou Honig. He's the co-founder and chairman of the InsurTech Connect Conference, which takes place September 23rd to 25th in Las Vegas. Caribou will be talking about trends in InsurTech, the human and social implications of InsurTech, and why insurers should aspire to be dentists and not toothbrushes. This has been the Accenture Insurance Influencers Podcast. I'm your host, Igrani Yu. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform to get new episodes as they're released. Thanks for listening.